Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. New York State education officials have unveiled a proposal that would transform the state's graduation requirements. As the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports, the plan is intended to bring equity to all students, but some questions remain.
The New York State Education Department's plan would transform how graduating students are assessed. State Education Commissioner Betty Rosa began working on the mission to reimagine graduation requirements in 2019 when she was a Regents Chancellor. Rosa, a former superintendent, says the proposed requirements aim to create true equity in education.
I think that our educational system, in many ways, really responds to a certain group of students, and yet it doesn't do a good job in bringing along some of our students that have a different way of absorbing and learning and demonstrating what they know.
The first area of transformation is to adopt what's called the New York State Portrait of a Graduate, a set of criteria that includes critical thinking, problem-solving, cultural and social-emotional competency, and more.
We truly want our kids to innovate. We want them to be inspired. We want them to think about opportunities, possibilities. We want them to be, even when they read journal pieces, media pieces that are out there, we want them to be critical thinkers.
Other key recommendations of the proposal include redefining credits to focus on proficiency rather than completion of a time-based system, sunsetting diploma assessment requirements, no longer requiring all students pass the standardized Regents exams to graduate, and moving to one diploma. Districts would still be allowed to recognize students who go beyond required coursework with special seals or endorsements. Jamie Safone, Executive Vice President of New York State United Teachers, says the state's largest teachers union supports all four proposals.
When you really look at what these project-based learning opportunities do, is they make those real-world connections. They deepen vocabulary in content. And I think it's really important for people to know that this is not about lowering standards. It's really about meeting our students where they're at.
The recommendations were developed by a body of stakeholders called the New York State Blue Ribbon Commission on Graduation Measures. Jay Warona, Deputy Executive Director and General Counsel for the New York State School Boards Association, praised the state's approach.
There were students, there were, you know, parents, there were school board members, there were superintendents. And I think that, you know, my understanding of talking to many of these people is that this was not preordained by the State Education Department. This is what the education community came up with in terms of what would be best for students. And that to me, you know, is democracy in the making, and that sounds like a good idea to me.
Arlen Benjamin Gomez, Executive Director of the Education Trust New York, says the group is largely in support of three of the core tenets, but does have concerns with the proposal to sunset the Regents exam requirement.
So removing the one objective statewide standard is very concerning. And there's a reason why nearly every civil rights organization has supported annual assessments in the federal ESSA requirements, for example, because we know that without some sort of standardized objective criteria, we don't end up knowing what students of color in particular and students from low-income backgrounds how schools are meeting the needs of those populations and how we can target resources for them.
Commissioner Rosa says the plan is to allow Regents exams to be at the table in assessing students, but not to take center stage.
You know, the example I always use is that when you go to the doctor doesn't just do one exam, right, before they say, we're going to need surgery, right? They go through a battery. And so we want to do the same thing. We want to make sure that we are measuring all the elements and that we're coming up with a composite that makes sense.
The Education Department is planning a series of forums this summer to gather feedback on the transformation plan. Rosa also acknowledges there are a lot of unknowns related to implementation.
We have to come up with strategic planning. We have to create a strategic plan for this endeavor. And we also know that there are going to be unforeseen consequences that we have to grapple with. And so we are prepared to do that. But we're also, you know, this train has left the station. It's on the road. And we hope that by the time the regions look at the timeline and look at what comes next in terms of the implementation, that we're in a good place with our communities.
The State Education Department is scheduled to present an implementation plan to the Board of Regents in November. Until a new system of graduation requirements is approved by the board, existing requirements will remain in effect for New York Public Schools.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. This week, I sat down with State Senator Liz Krueger, a Democrat from the east side of Manhattan, to talk about the fact that she's angry over Governor Kathy Hochul sinking the congestion pricing plan for Manhattan at the very end of session.
Well, you've listed out a bunch of realities that no one likes to pay more money for anything. People don't like taxes. We talk about that all the time. But if you live in a cohesive society with government and laws and services so that you don't live in chaos, you pay taxes. The public transportation system, MTA, for 12 counties in the southern region of New York State is the most important mass transit system, I would say, in the world, based on the volume that it carries and the fact that the metropolitan region is the breadbasket for the entire region, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and the central business zone, which my district covers half of, in lower Manhattan, is got a congestion crisis where we have 1.3 million people commute into that zone every day for work. 85% of them use mass transit, just 143,000 of them drive vehicles. And it's created a nightmare situation where the average speed of traffic in Midtown Manhattan is now 4.5 miles an hour, that there are so many cars on the streets that you literally can walk faster, and the environmental impacts are enormously problematic for air quality for people who live there and commute into there. And in fact, the research shows we lose $20 billion a year in lost time because of the traffic problem. So congestion pricing is a proposal that lots of people didn't like for all kinds of reasons, but we worked on it for 15 years at least, and it was the best option we could come up with to address the need for more money for the capital construction plan of the MTA to keep our mass transit system in a state of good repair and functioning as the largest mass transit system in this country, to address congestion by pulling, we estimate, 100,000 vehicles off the streets in the zone each day, and for environmental concerns, which the last couple of days, when you read the weather reports in New York City, basically they're saying try to stay out of outside, not just because the heat is so bad, but because the air quality is so bad. So this was something that was thought through, hearing after hearing, meeting after meeting, approval after approval, lawsuit to be won after lawsuit to be won, federal approval, state approval, city approval. Sure, plenty of people didn't think it was a great idea. Well, the other cities that have done it found that before it starts, people really are unhappy. And once it starts, people forget that it was even an issue. And then suddenly, on the last 2-3 days of session, when we're at our absolute busiest trying to finish so many other pieces of legislation, the governor simply announced she was pausing or not allowing congestion start pricing to start. And it was only 2 weeks, 3 weeks away, scheduled to start June 30th. And it just knocked the wind out of everyone. So was I upset? Yeah, I was upset. And now I'm even more upset the more I think about it, because there's no alternative being proposed. And it can't just be a money alternative. We have to raise $1 billion a year so that the MTA can bond $15 billion immediately to complete projects they've already started. But there's no answer for how you address getting 100,000 vehicles off the streets in Manhattan, or how you address the environmental issues. So I keep waiting every day for someone to tell me, oh, here's an alternative plan that's going to solve all these problems. I have heard nothing.
Well, and at the time, you called for a lawsuit. Are we going to see any lawsuit as a result of this?
Well, I actually didn't call it for a lawsuit. I highlighted that I believed a number of her actions violated state laws. Other people then started to call for lawsuits. So I do believe there are a number of lawsuits in development, some of them around the issue of there was a state law that was passed. There were agreements with the federal government that were signed. There's the expectation now that we will lose an enormous amount of federal matching funds for the MTA. There had been a lawsuit specifically around commitments to make the subway system in New York City more disability accessible by providing elevators and escalators. That was a lawsuit that was agreed upon. The MTA had a plan of how it was going to expand subway station by subway station accessibility. I believe the disability community is planning one or more lawsuits. There are environmental laws that we passed in New York State requiring reductions in our carbon footprint, requiring reductions in the impact of pollution. I believe that there are lawsuits planned in the environmental community. And then there's just the fundamental obligation for the MTA board to be fiduciarily responsible and independent of the governor, even if she appointed them to be on the board. That was a 2009 law change on responsibilities and independence of public authority boards. So there's lots and lots of legal questions that I believe show we can't actually stop this now, but it will be others who end up determining whether there are legal challenges to be made and if they go to court.
That's Democratic State Senator Liz Krueger. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York State Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie says he has questions about Governor Kathy Hochul's proposal to reinstate a pre-pandemic ban on people wearing masks in public. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt has more.
Hochul says she's considering revising and reinstating an 1845 law that bans wearing masks in public to respond to increased incidents of crime and threatening behavior in the New York City subways and other places where perpetrators wear masks to conceal their identity. She first made the comments in response to a question in an interview on CNN. She was asked about the call by some Jewish leaders to ban masks in light of the rash of protests against the Israeli-Hamas war, where many demonstrators wear them. She has since repeated her views, saying she won't tolerate individuals using masks to evade responsibility for their behaviors.
People who are wearing masks, who are able to commit crimes because they're now undetected, it's a challenge for our law enforcement.
The mask law was repealed at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic in the spring of 2020. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie says the governor has reached out to him on the issue, but he has some concerns, including how to carve out exceptions for legitimate mask wearing, like during a pandemic, or if someone wants to keep themselves or others safe from germs.
She did raise it with me, and those were pretty much my questions.
But Hastie says he's open to trying to work out a solution.
I think it's a conversation we need to have about figuring it out. People have found a way to go around the system or laws that's in place. You always got to try to counteract that. But there's challenges with that, you know, for religious reasons, for health reasons.
Hochul says she does not envision outlawing surgical masks for people who are sick or when there's a contagious outbreak. And she says those masks only partially cover the face.
A surgical mask, as we came very used to seeing, doesn't cover most of your face. It covers a portion of your face. Some of the masks that have been used in this, you know, the assault on the subway train, that covers everything but your eyes. So there's a distinction in the types of masks.
Both the governor and the assembly speaker are not ruling out a return to Albany before next January to address the mask issue, but they say it's too early yet to make any definitive plans. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
Following the adjournment of the New York legislative session, the Republicans and Democrats representing areas of the North Country are expressing disappointment with where key issues ended up. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley with that story.
Republican Dan Steck served four terms in the Assembly and in 2020 was elected to represent the 45th State Senate District, which includes Clinton, Essex, Franklin, and Warren counties, and parts of St. Lawrence and Washington counties. It is the largest Senate district geographically in New York. He criticizes the democratically controlled chambers for the record budget.
It really came at a whopping $239 billion, significant increase year to year, and a huge increase in the last 5 years since we've had one-party rule. The spending has just gone off the rails. And, you know, the end of session got sidetracked because of the congestion pricing kerfuffle between the governor and the two majorities. She hits the pause button and just opens a hornet's nest with the Democrats in the legislature. And so the end of session kind of got sidetracked, and a lot of things that I was hoping to get done did not happen.
Democrat D. Billy Jones was first elected in 2016 to represent the state's northernmost 115th Assembly District, which includes Clinton and Franklin counties and four towns in St. Lawrence County. He says Governor Kathy Hochul's pause in the congestion pricing plan has implications for the North Country.
What this would have done with the congestion pricing is would have come up with $1 billion to further bond for capital projects at the MTA. And of course, that has a significant effect in our area because our manufacturing here in the Plattsburgh region depends so much on MTA contracts. And I will say, on top of that, pulling of that congestion pricing formula, the MTA still needs to come up with that money so that they can bond for those capital projects. So, you know, we have our work cut out there.
A $15 toll set to take effect June 30th for drivers entering Lower Manhattan was put on indefinite pause by Governor Hochul in the closing days of the session. As for the overall session, Assemblyman Jones expressed disappointment that a bill to register UTVs, or utility terrain vehicles, and a package to further aid EMS providers failed to move forward. He finds that few bills passed at the end of the session will impact his district.
A lot of the big issues were dealt with in the budget. I can't think of anything right now that is earth-shattering that did go through or didn't go through. But, you know, every year it's the same. It's a rush towards the end, but we'll continue to push for legislative agendas that are going to benefit the North Country.
Jones and Steck had been working on a constitutional amendment that would remove three closed prisons from the Adirondack Forest Preserve in order to accelerate potential sale of the properties. Senator Steck points to Camp Gabriel's, which has been closed since 2009.
I was hopeful, and I'm certainly not opposed to a constitutional amendment for all three prisons. I'll tell you this, it's not clear that one is even legally necessary for Mount McGregor in Saratoga County because that prison's not located in the blue line. And then in the case of Mariah Shock, that one's the most recently closed one, and it's not clear that the state isn't going to use it for its own purposes. But we know we do for Camp Gabriel's. That's been around for 5 years. Everyone's on board with it, except for some unknown party in the assembly. I think we have a right to know who's holding it up in the assembly and what is their reason.
Among the positive bills the representative cite from the session are passage of continued routine infrastructure and CHIPS funding.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. The Israel-Hamas war has overshadowed many of the issues in this month's primary race in New York's 16th Congressional District and highlighted divides within the Democratic Party. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King reports.
Second-term Congressman Jamal Bowman and term-limited Westchester County Executive George Latimer have been locked in a contentious debate tour ahead of the Democratic primary on June 25th. In a virtual forum with the League of Women Voters of Westchester County, those fractions were on full display as Latimer derided Bowman as bombastic and Bowman criticized Latimer for taking funds from pro-Israel donors.
My opponent is a multimillionaire funded by billionaires, many Republican billionaires. And we're not going to pass codifying Roe v. Wade or voting rights or climate justice or anything as long as big money continues to control our politics.
Jamal, you have to pull the truth alarm now. Enough of this. I am a multimillionaire. Are you kidding me? I
would get Bowman is considered one of the most vulnerable House members going into the primary, in large part due to his comments on the Israel-Hamas war. More than 35,000 Palestinians have been killed in Israel's bombing of Gaza since October 7th, when the terrorist organization Hamas launched an attack that killed more than 1,200 Israeli citizens. Bowman, who is part of a larger group of progressive Democrats known unofficially as the Squad, has accused Israel of committing genocide in Gaza and at one point dismissed claims that Hamas committed sexual violence on October 7th as propaganda, a stance he has since taken back. Latimer, meanwhile, has presented himself to voters as a more moderate Democrat across the board and has received significant funds raised by the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC. Speaking with WAMC, Latimer says he thinks long-term peace in the region will require Israeli and Palestinian leaders to negotiate a two-state solution. But he doesn't think Hamas should be at the table and supports Israel's efforts to defend itself.
I don't give Israel a blank check, but I do think Israel has a right to exist. And I think there's been a lot of opposition to Israel that comes from an underlying anti-Semitism and hatred of Israel. And the incumbent has completely focused on, you know, Israel is the problem and the rhetoric is focused on Israel. And I don't think that's consistent with the way most people in the district think.
The 16th Congressional District, which includes Westchester County and part of the Bronx, has one of the state's largest Jewish populations behind New York City. Bowman did not respond to a request for an interview, but he has repeatedly denied accusations of anti-Semitism. At Monday's debate, Bowman said he also supports a two-state solution. However, he thinks the U.S. should do more to divest from Israel and push for a ceasefire.
We need a permanent ceasefire right now, and we need food to get into Gaza today. Our taxpayer dollars are going towards supporting a famine. This is unacceptable.
On the flip side, Bowman accuses Latimer of bending to his donors and running a racist campaign that leads into a portrayal of Bowman as a, quote, angry black man. Latimer rejects the latter and says that the majority of his donations are from people inside the district. While Bowman has the endorsement of House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries and national progressive voices like Senators Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, Latimer says his endorsements are more local, including state lawmakers and the mayors of Yonkers, Larchmont, and Port Chester.
I know who I am. I know what I've done. I've worked very hard for the people of Westchester County, and of course, I intend to work hard for the Bronx. If on primary day I lose and he wins, that's the end of my campaign. I'm not going to continue on. I understand the unity that Democrats have to have. He's made no such commitment.
Congressman Mondaire Jones here endorsing my friend and Westchester County Executive George Latimer.
That unity was tested again last week when Latimer picked up an endorsement from former Congressman Mondaire Jones, a one-time progressive who is hoping to return to Congress in the nearby 17th District by unseating Republican Mike Lawler in November. The move cost Jones the support of some progressive groups, but he told CNN there was no love lost.
People in that district and in mine and throughout the lower Hudson Valley share in how horrified I have been by Mr. Bowman's conduct since the events of October 7th.
At Monday's debate, Bowman and Latimer also squabbled over their records on taxes and their efforts to combat gun violence, build housing, and improve infrastructure in the district. Whatever their differences, Bowman said it's important the Democratic Party puts its best foot forward in November.
My opponent represents a status quo. That status quo got us Donald Trump. And he may go back into office again to be dictator of our country. What we need in November is young people and people of color to come out to vote in big numbers. That is my base. I can get them out. And that's why you all should support me on June 25th.
You can find a link to watch the full debate at WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jesse King.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2425 and join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.